Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, March the 6th. And our top story today is that it's been revealed more than £4 million worth of taxpayers' money was spent on plans for a new development near Folkestone, which never materialised. Bosses in the previous administration wanted to build 150 homes and a leisure centre at Prince's Parade in Hythe. However, the proposals were later scrapped as the site isn't suitable. Well, we've actually got a breakdown of where that £4 million went. More than £2 million was spent on planning, management and consultancy fees, while close to £1.9 million was paid to a construction firm lined up to deliver the project. Just to give you a bit of history of all of this, the idea of developing Prince's Parade was first suggested way back in 2012. However, there was a lot of opposition from residents. Despite that opposition, a planning application was submitted 5 years later. But after years of delays and objections, the plans were finally scrapped last year. Jim Martin is the current leader of the council and he's been speaking to our reporter Oliver Leonard.
At the time that the whole scheme was envisaged, the government was actively encouraging local authorities up and down the country to borrow more money. The phrase was realise their assets, which effectively meant do some development. And so there are many, many. Woking is a big example. Spelthorne is another. But up and down the country, there are examples of local authorities that developed shopping centres or developed office blocks or developed that have really, really got into a lot of debt over there. Now, where we don't compare remotely with those. This is a relatively small but manageable problem, but of course it has an impact on this area. Now, what you have to do is you have to kind of take yourself back to that time. You're being given almost unlimited money to borrow at a very low interest rate because you're a council, and you're being encouraged almost on a daily basis by central government to do more about generating your own income in order to provide, you know, local services and do more for local people. So if you come to Prince's Parade and you look at this this site that is almost a mile long, all overlooking the channel, sea views everywhere, that backs onto, you know, the Royal Military Canal. The uninformed person would say, well, this is a development opportunity that just needs to be taken, you know. So I do have sympathy, and I understand the thinking that led to the idea that it could be developed, but it couldn't.
Because of the contamination and the complications behind it.
Yeah, it's the contamination. The contamination is complex. During the late 60s, early 70s, this was the town tip, and it was often unmanned, and the refuge was unsegregated. It was largely unsupervised, so nobody really knows what's in here. It's been surveyed over and over and over again, and almost every survey brings up something different.
And
they're all nasty. There's traces of everything here: heavy metals, hospital waste, all sorts of stuff. So that's why it's got to remain. That's why it's got to remain where it is. The on most contaminated sites, you can cap the top, you can cap the sides, and that's your problem solved. Here, you can cap the top, you can cap the sides, but the presence of the sea and the tidal action of the sea means that there is a dynamic hydrology which is acting under the site, which means the site is constantly live. It's constantly being pressured up and then pulled, sucked down, and that makes it unstable. So that's why there isn't anybody that can give you guarantees and it's guaranteed, you know, when you're putting people to live there and having children in swimming pools and things like that, you need to be pretty sure that you've got every guarantee in the book.
So are you basically saying that when you're in charge that nothing is going to be built on here?
No, I'm definitely saying it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a situation where anything gets built. Now, I can imagine a path being created or the playground or whatever. But what we see here, apart from clearing up the rubbish that people keep putting in there, nothing else is going to happen to it. The land needs some time to recover. Poor old Princess Parade needs a rest. You know, nature will re-establish itself. The badgers have moved back, as I said. The birds, the all of the reptiles were removed. We spent like £200,000 removing the reptiles.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They're all back.
Yeah.
They're all back. We lost 200 trees along the bank of the canal, so they could move the reptiles over there. They've all come back. Yeah, I hope there's a few reptiles left, but do you know what I mean? it's like trying to push the tide back.
Yeah.
It can't be done. You know, you can build defences, you can cap, you can do stuff, but ultimately, you know, nature will prevail.
Now, the former council leader is a man called David Monk, and he's told Kent Online the Prince's Parade project was a brilliant scheme. He claims it would have transformed the area. He's also told us the plans weren't submitted on a whim and had full council approval. Well, you can read this story in full today by heading to the website, and you can let us know what you think. Should the development have gone ahead, or was it right to scrap it? You can leave a comment on the story or on our socials.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a Rochester man's appeared in court accused of seriously injuring a man walking his dog in a late night crash. Adam Jacobs is said to have been driving along Lower Rochester Road in Wainscott in April 2023 when a car mounted the curb, striking the victim and killing his dog. The 40-year-old, who lives in Jarrett Avenue, has pleaded not guilty and been released on bail ahead of a hearing later this month. Investigators are again asking for information following a serious crash on the A249. Two cars collided near Stockbury last Tuesday night. A man in his 30s was flown to a London hospital and is still in a serious condition. Police want to hear from anyone who was in the area at the time and may have dash cam footage. A Kent teacher's been banned from the profession for having an inappropriate conversation with a pupil. Simon Bell, who worked at Ebbsfleet Academy between September 2018 and August 2021, talked to the student about his own mental health and told her she had autism. A panel found he showed a lack of genuine remorse and has been banned from teaching indefinitely. A Maidstone man who failed a roadside breath test after being pulled over for excessive beeping has been banned from driving. Ivo Redev was in the high street when police walked over to have a word and smelled alcohol. The 35-year-old, who lives in Stockett Lane in Coxheath, has lost his licence for 17 months and must pay £250. Now, next today, a Kent homelessness charity has revealed a 21% increase in demand for their services in the space of just a year. Footfall at Catching Lives in Canterbury has gone up from around 11,000 in 2023 to more than 13,300 last year. We've been speaking to Chief Executive Tasmin Maitland, who says people are relying on their support for longer.
So in 2024, we saw 517 people, which was only a small increase on 2023, but the footfall increased by 21%, so over 13,000 visits. So, and that's the second year in a row where we've had an increase in footfall over 20%. So we're seeing not a lot more individuals, but the people we are seeing, we're seeing more times. They're coming to us for longer and getting stuck in those sort of homelessness situations for longer and needing our help for a longer period.
And so these people that are with the service for, you know, a longer stretch of time, what sort of struggles are they coming up against?
So we work with people who are homeless or insecurely housed. So people who are coming to us multiple times are often those who are sleeping rough, for example. So really struggling to find options to move off the streets. Access to affordable housing is a real challenge, whether that's private rented sector, supported housing or social housing. Across all forms of accommodation, people are struggling to find things that they can afford on low incomes or on benefits. So we find it takes much longer to get people housed, whether that's through the council or through other local housing providers. There are also other issues that people are facing. So mental health issues are something that we see a lot of people struggling with, and it's really hard to get access to mental health services. There's really long waiting lists. The thresholds are really high. So we see people who are really struggling with their mental health, and that's made worse by their homelessness. And they're coming back to us again and again because they're struggling to find other forms of support and to move on and get the help that they need to move on.
Are the figures surprising to you to see that we've seen another increase? I mean, over the past sort of years and months, I suppose, we've seen cuts to services and a lot of charities and support services really being put under pressure. So did this come as a surprise?
Unfortunately, it's not a surprise. We can see just day by day in our drop-in. We're open 7 days a week, and we can see that we're just dealing with more people each day. So we see an average of 36 people coming through our doors every single day. And some days that's as high as 45 to 50. And people are finding it a lot harder to find the routes away from homelessness. Even if people are really, motivated, they're doing everything they can, they're trying their best, we're supporting them, and yet still things don't change. So it's frustrating, but not really surprising. I think charities like Catching Lives and others, we're really trying to fill the gaps that have been left by cuts to other services. We know that local authorities are struggling, that other public services are struggling, but it's difficult for us to try and help people when we don't have all the solutions. We need access to accommodation, we need access to mental health services, and we can't do all of that ourselves.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. I was going to ask, what sort of strain does an increase in numbers like this put on the services that you offer? Are you finding, I suppose, do you have to make that tough decision? Do you help more people a little bit less, or do you help fewer people that little bit more, if that makes sense? Are you finding you're having to make tough decisions?
So Catching Lives is as open door as possible. We try and work with everybody who needs us on any given day. But in reality, our day centre is effectively one room. So everybody's in that same space. And the more people we see, the harder it is to do effective work because everybody's feeling stressed. They're having to share that space with other people. We're trying to prioritise who might need help first, trying to follow up on work that we've done earlier in the week to make sure people are still moving forwards. Reminding the council and other services that people are still waiting for an answer and still needing their help. So it's a tough call. My team are having to work really hard to try and meet everybody's needs. But in reality, the busier we get, the harder it is to do a good job with everybody. And so we are becoming more and more stretched, and that is having an impact on the support that we can offer. So we're doing our best, but we do need more support from other services across society, particularly public services, in order to move people on.
The charity works to provide food, accommodation, and help with things like completing documents.
Kent Online reports.
Figures from the Home Office show another 326 asylum seekers made the crossing to Kent on Tuesday. They were in six small boats. More than 1,100 people have made the journey since the start of the month. It takes the yearly total to more than 3,000. The Royal Navy has tracked a Russian warship as it made its way along the Kent coast. HMS Somerset watched the vessel's every move as it made its way through the English Channel to the North Sea. It came at the same time the Ukrainian president was in the country to meet European leaders in London. A Kent woman who lost her baby at 22 and a half weeks pregnant is welcoming a huge change in the law, which will see bereaved parents get paid leave from work. Keely Langthorne has been campaigning since George was born in March 2022. An amendment to the Employment Rights Bill will allow mums and dads who experience a pregnancy loss before 24 weeks gestation to have a fortnight off. Well, Keely has been telling me that it's a momentous occasion and came at a very poignant time.
I had a really difficult week, and then Monday hit and it was George's birthday and we were by the sea and it was lovely. And then Monday night come, and then out of nowhere I got a message saying George's law has been successful, and Parliament are going to enact more than George's law. So yeah, it's been very overwhelming. I haven't stopped crying. Today's the first day I haven't cried since Monday. The fact that it was announced on George's birthday has really touched me. Obviously no one knew that that was George's birthday, but I keep going back to the article and looking at the date just to double check. And yeah, the fact it was done on George's birthday is just overwhelming.
I mean, there's something there, isn't there? When those sorts of things happen, you just know it's meant to be. You mentioned there that it's George's law and more. Just explain what's been approved and what this amendment is.
So in January, we had a report from the government, the Equality Report, which was created or chaired by Sarah Owens MP, who's done amazing and phenomenal work on this. And the report found that the need for bereavement leave after a miscarriage under 24 weeks was in fact overwhelming. So the law in its current stance says that if you lose a baby under 24 weeks, you're not entitled to any paid leave from work. And the report found no, not only was this is happening to one out of five families every year, but that it was the only sector of society not covered by bereavement leave, and that there was a real gap in the law. So the latest report is that the government are going to accept the proposals of the report, which means now that if you lose a baby after under 24 weeks, you'll be entitled to 2 weeks paid leave, which is the same as you would if you lost a baby after 24 weeks.
How much will that mean to all of those families? Because as you know, you were expected to, would have been expected to go straight back to work. What difference will these 2 weeks make?
Oh, it's going to make a phenomenal difference. So the statistics tell us that this new law will now help 250,000 parents a year. Like, the numbers are staggering. The law said in its current stance that when I lost George on a Thursday morning, I was expected back in work. Time recalled in on a Friday morning, and when I've got a midwife trying to stop my milk and I'm trying to plan a funeral, and it just shows you how archaic the law has been in this area, and how now finally, after 3 years of campaigning, we've now finally got to the stage where so George's law was only ever intended to be 3 days paid leave to mirror legislation in New Zealand, but now the fact that it's 2 weeks is even more great. So obviously in October we had the NHS saying they were going to allow 10 days to their employees, and I said publicly that I thought that the government would match that, but it seems the government are doing much more and are actually offering 2 weeks. So we obviously had the baby loss certificates, which was 18 months ago, where we get to have a baby loss certificate for a baby, but now we get to be able to have the paid time off work to actually mourn that baby as well.
Kent Online reports.
There are calls for an Ashford school to use common sense after children were punished for being late as roadworks plague the town. Students at the North School have been given detentions, with the school urging mums and dads to leave plenty of extra travel time. Well, frustrated mums and dads want leniency, and there are seven different road closures or temporary traffic lights causing gridlock in the area. Elsewhere, parents on Sheppey have been left outraged after their children were offered secondary school places nearly 30 miles from home. Around 50 families have been told their kids will have to travel to places as far as Faversham, Maidstone and even Canterbury. The County Council's been criticised for not offering to help, with the appeals process being called long-winded and confusing. Now, for the first time in a generation, NHS patients have begun receiving blood plasma from donors from Kent. Donations have been paused since 1998 due to fears about the spread of mad cow disease, but that ban has now been lifted. Officials have hailed it as a landmark moment, which will reduce reliance on imported products and help save thousands of lives each year. Plasma makes up 55% of our blood, and it contains antibodies which strengthen or stabilise the immune system. Now, those antibodies are separated out and made into medicines which treat people with life-limiting illnesses such as immune deficiencies. Well, Kate's been speaking to Denise Dowsing from Maidstone, who has common variable immune deficiency.
That means I don't make enough antibodies in my blood to keep myself well. So I have 3 weekly infusions of immunoglobulin, that's the blood plasma, and that keeps my immune system up to where it should be, and keeps me well.
The plasma products that you've been getting have been coming from outside of the UK. Has that ever thrown up any challenges, any supply issues, or anything like that?
Yes, definitely. There is a global shortage of this product. And it has been a worry because there have been times where I've been told my treatment might be delayed, and I've actually missed a treatment in the past because of that shortage. So to know that this product is being made and available now in the UK, it's really good for people like me with conditions or similar to me, or conditions, other conditions that need this treatment.
And what would be some of the consequences if you weren't able to get your treatments regularly? Is it a life-threatening thing?
It can be potentially, prior to having being diagnosed with this condition and prior to having the treatment, I was very, very unwell with lots and lots of different things over a number of years. And my quality of life was rapidly going downhill. I was hospitalized many times, and there was a lot going on with me that couldn't be explained. However, when I was then diagnosed and put on this treatment, my quality of life did change dramatically, and I can now live day to day a fairly normal life.
And it must be quite reassuring now that we're no longer relying on overseas imports, that the products that you need are being produced and created here in the county.
Yeah, and it's absolutely amazing because, if there are any issues with getting it over, it's not so much of an issue now that we are, people here are donating, and I want to thank all of those people who are donating and helping people like me, to be able to have that here and to be able to produce it and make it here, and it to be more readily available in this country is fantastic.
Tell me a little bit more about the donors. I know that some people feel a little bit apprehensive about donating blood or plasma or anything really. But just how important is it? And would you urge people just to do donate if they can?
Anyone who's listening to this, first of all, thank you if you already do, and please continue doing it because it makes such a difference to, a lot of people's lives like mine. Anyone who's thinking about it and is well enough to do it, because not everyone can, please do consider giving blood.
Thanks so much to Denise for chatting to us. One of the longest running farmers markets in Kent is under threat because of new parking restrictions. Westmorling Market has been operating for the last 25 years, but the nearby car park now has a maximum stay of 4 hours, which stall holders say isn't long enough. More than 2,000 people have signed a petition to have the rules changed. It's going to be debated by Cabinet next month. And finally, a cat that was reported missing in Rainham 10 years ago has been reunited with its owner. Candy sparked a widespread search after wandering off from her family in 2015. She'd been handed into a rescue centre when the person thought to be her owner died, but made her way home after they scanned her microchip.
Kent Online Sports.
Tennis, and Emma Raducanu's due in action at Indian Wells later. It's her first tournament back since spotting a stalker in the crowd at the Dubai Championships last month. Security for the 22-year-old from Orpington has been stepped up. She's due to face Mayuka Uchijima of Japan. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Blue Sky. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to Kent Online, and whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription. Plus, whilst you're on the website today, don't forget to check out the very latest Eat My Words food review.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.